We're here to talk conference championships, NFC and AFC. Chiefs edged by the Bills, and the Eagles win convincingly against the Commanders. We'll talk about both those games. I definitely have my 2 cents. I'm sure the guys have their 2 cents about it. But the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl again for the 5th time in 6 years. I had a couple of shots of some whiskey after the game. Had a despondent look on my face, just like Josh Allen at the end of that game. First, let's go to the NFC. Guys, it was a fun game. I know the score was a blowout, but I think it wasn't as much of a blowout as the score would indicate, at least not until the fourth quarter. It was pretty contested. Jaden Daniels did what he could do in the air and on the ground, led his team in rushing yards, had a couple touchdowns, pass and rushing combined. Zach Ertz had a hell of a game as well. But they did have some mistakes, you know, some costly fumbles, some turnovers. And Jalen Hurts had a hell of a game, man. Nothing too crazy. The box score does not light it up by any means. 20 for 28, 246, one touchdown. His leg did look a little wobbly to me, but he was quick enough around the corners, got a couple rushing touchdowns as well. Philly, overall, just dominant on the ground game. Saquon Barkley, again, 15 carries, 118 yards, 3 TDs, and even Shipley got in the action. Man, that guy is quick. The white boy out of Clemson, pretty impressive. At least that's how it appeared to be, at least in the first half. It was still pretty close. At least, you know, the Commanders were somewhat within striking range. But when did you feel it was over?
I think it was the second turnover inside their own territory at that point. I remember talking to my friends at halftime. One of them had said, like, feels like Washington, I don't know if they're getting screwed, or it's just like, it feels like Washington's doing good right now. And like, the halftime start really didn't dictate that, because I think Philly was still up by 2 scores, at least at that point. But I was like, it's turnovers at that point. And, you know, was it 3 fumbles overall, 1 interception by Daniels? I think just really was the biggest tail of the game at that point. That, you know, and I think the second one inside their own territory, it allowed Philly to get, you know, pretty easy points, was just going to be too insurmountable. Philly was the better team coming in. They've been first or second best team in the NFC all year, and you're going to give them that much of an opportunity on short fields. I think that was pretty much what it is. I mean, obviously the fourth quarter, as you said, it was close until really the fourth quarter. Philly really took it away, but, you know, the consistent turnovers, and that's it. I think talking for both games, honestly, it's where the ball was bouncing for both teams. Like Buffalo, I'm going to get to that game, but Buffalo had a few balls on the ground and then they got them back. Like Josh Allen just palming a ball that he puts on the ground.
Yeah.
Where in this game, the Commanders, ball went on the ground, Philly was getting it each time.
Yeah, I mean, the 4 turnovers, you can't do that. I mean, Philly, we talked about it, Jason and I, like 6-7 weeks ago, when Washington turned the ball over 5 times against Philly. They were at home. Daniels got 22 points in the fourth quarter, rallied them back. The thing, like you said, Rome, one guy was missing in that game. That guy's name, Jalen Hurts. He came out. He was efficient. 20 for 28, like you said. What, 246 passing. 3 rushing touchdowns himself. So yeah, even though the knee may not have been 100%, he took the brace off before. It felt well enough. Like you said, he was moving around. I think he only ate maybe 1 or 2 bad sacks in this game where Washington blitzed. But, you know, the game kind of felt similar early, like the championship game in the college football, with Washington literally going down the field, going for it like on 4th down 3 different times, converting. They get a field goal, and then literally 1 play later, Saquon's gone for a 60-yard TD run. Like that
so
moment
crazy.
Right there, if you want to talk about the game being over, even though it wasn't, I felt like, dude, Philly's going to the Super Bowl. It's just like that magical moment where they're going to go. For me, the game, I think, officially was probably over in the 3rd quarter when Washington went 3 and out on that first drive. Philly then went up, what, 34-15. Unless, you know, Philly was going to turn the ball over a couple times and never score again, I didn't see Washington being able to come back from that deficit.
Yeah, every team deserved to be here that were in the conference championship, but it was obvious to me that like three of the teams were the cream of the crop. Although I'm not a big Chiefs guy, you know, Bills, Chiefs, Eagles, these three teams were the three best teams in the NFL. And Washington, hell of a year. They just happened to get here. It was a great run. Some mistakes, you know, you expect that from a team that's a little early on the curve. Just like my opinion that the Bills were a little early as well with their new championship window. We can talk about that later, but it was exciting. And then it wasn't, as you mentioned, Saquon Barkley, man. Like, he'll get like 1 or 2 yards. He's not like a real punisher. Then all of a sudden, he just split the seams, split the defenders, and he was gone, dude. He just did like the little circle juke move, rolled around two guys, and took off. It was a really cool run, man. I really loved that, and I really loved the Shipley run at the end of the game as well when they really broke it open. And I think he scored right after like another 20-yard run, something like that. Pretty fun.
He had a 2-yard rush right at the end, but yeah, the run Aaron's talking about for Barkley, like it was such a great play. Like, they had motion going like left to right across the formation. You know, Barkley runs a stretch out to the left, and Brady broke this down like pretty well too. Like, the key in that was like Billy Wagner just getting caught up like behind one of the tackles at the stretch, and at that point, like, Saquon had the seam, was able to make two guys kind of miss from the corners and stuff and cut back. Like, it was a thing of perfection. Aaron's right. That did come across my mind with the national championship game, where this methodical drive, then the other team just like comes out and it's like no big deal from a rushing attack. But the fumbles that Washington was occurring was like not an accident. Like, as a Bears fan, that they're doing the old Charles Tillman peanut punch like every single time a Washington ball carrier had the ball. And that's just something Sirianni preaches. They're talking about in the broadcast, and like, they were making sure, like, we are making you punish for staying up with that ball, and we're going to get the ball out. It was just, it was a game-changing point, and it's something that defense obviously preaches and executed well when they needed it most.
Yeah, I mean, on that, you know, Philly does a good job of game tackling you, and as Jason just mentioned, doing the old Peanut Tillman punch out, like, every game right now in these playoffs, they're forcing multiple turnovers. I mean, they did the same thing against Green Bay. And not only that, they're doing it on kickoffs and punts. They forced two special teams fumbles, one here against Washington, the opening kickoff against Green Bay that basically took that game, and Philly had all the momentum. Philly, you know, say what you want, they're like a juggernaut, man. You keep feeding them turnovers, you're going to get blown out. And that's what they did against Washington. 55 points, guys. I mean, I think I was on the under in this game, and Philly just themselves just took the over.
Oh, man, they blew it open, yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, we talk about, Rome, you mentioned the three teams, Buffalo, Philly, KC being in there. Baltimore would be that fourth team as the top-tier teams. Like, if these teams get going and you give them turnovers, they're just going to run you out the building.
That's an interesting thing.
It won't be close games. They will run you out the building, especially this Philly team, as we've seen. They've been on a roll, man. I mean, looking back, as a healthy team, they have not lost since the month of September against Tampa Bay, really, if you look at this roster.
Yeah, they're on a hell of a roll. Fangio's defense, number one in the NFL, hell of a job. They did a really great job. Like, if you look at their totality of the season, in the beginning, we're talking about Sirianni possibly getting fired. He's shaving his head, cussing out the fans, cussing out broadcasters, and like showing up on the Pat McAfee show, telling everyone to go fuck themselves, basically. And then they go on this run. People complain about Hurts not being a really good quarterback. I was kind of thinking, like, Purdy kind of reminds me a little bit about Hurts. Maybe we can get into that some other time in the future. But very similar, where he's kind of like managing the game. He has weapons, doesn't use all the time. His receivers are complaining. They're still winning. Barkley's he changed the game. MVP conversation. They had some really great acquisitions on defense. They moved Bond around. And right when they moved around, that's when they really started stuffing a lot of the run. So, hell of a year, man. Really good game plan. And Sirianni, I think he has like the second most wins in NFL history based on how many games he's coached already. Pretty impressive. All of this, he's kind of like Ryan Day, man. No one likes him, but he's winning.
Yeah, we talked about it last pod. Like, all he does is win, whatever. And Ryan Day was the perfect you know, comparison to that. He loses a couple key games here and there, but overall just wins every time. And now Sirianni's going to his second Super Bowl in 4 years as head coach or something like that. So, like,
pretty impressive.
You know, yeah, very impressive when you consider up until, you know, the Doug Peterson championship, it was, you know, a little bit few and far between for Philly, like, getting to the Super Bowl. I think once with Andy Reid, you know, but then they kept losing in the conference finals during the Andy Reid era. But when you, I mean, you think of the last, what, 30 years of Eagles football, like, really one of the more consistent, like, winning franchises out there, dating back to the Andy Reid's time, you know, with McNabb and them going to the NFC title game, was that 4 or 5 years in a row, only making the one Super Bowl. Little bit down during
that, a lot of money.
Yeah, a little bit down during that maybe Chip Kelly time or something. But then, you know, they come back. Doug Peterson wins the Super Bowl, down only for a little bit. Now they have the Sirianni run. So, you know, consistently they've been up there getting to the point. But now Sirianni taking them to two Super Bowls 4 years, whereas, hey, they only been to like two Super Bowls in the 20 years prior to that or something like that.
Yeah, so looking back, what's your guys' comments on the Washington Commanders before we say goodbye? And what do you think about the Eagles heading into the Super Bowl?
Commanders is interesting, obviously overachievers as we talk through, but at the same time, they got some older pieces in the roster that'll be interesting. A lot of, you know, I saw a good freezing Colts take on somebody on the Commanders where they talked about them signing Bobby Wagner and Austin Eckler and Zach Ertz. It's like, all these guys are washed and this and that. So, like, you know, they're all impact players to this team this year, but they are guys that are kind of on the other side of 30 that, you know, they're going to have to start replacing and stuff. And what's that going to be? So I think it's only kind of the start in this Dan Quinn era for the Commanders. Jaden's first year, so, you know, he's going to get better out of that. Really put some life into Terry McLaurin, who's been probably one of the more underrated receivers, and because he's had, you know, almost no one throwing him the ball and even being productive, and now that kind of unleashes. So I think there's some pieces there in place. Obviously, I think, you know, they're going to have to build a little more and, you know, kind of what some of these little aging players, you know, what's going to be their future. I think I saw Ertz basically say he wasn't retiring. He's kind of rejuvenated him and he's coming back. So I think probably the only start for them, and obviously it'll be a super competitive, you know, future with the Eagles. And then I don't know, maybe the Cowboys are still in it. I don't know. But I mean, now you got probably a good rivalry for the top of this division here for a little while with the Eagles and Commanders.
Yeah, I mean, if Jaden Daniels, if the future is anything like we saw, the future is bright in Washington. I mean, they do got to get some more weapons on offense, but I like their offensive line. I like Robinson Jr. Ertz is up there in age, but, you know, like Jason said, he looked rejuvenated. He had, what, 11 catches, 104 yards in this conference championship game. He could still get open.
Yeah.
So, I mean, might not be one of those things where he shows up every game, but hey, in the big games once a month when you need him, you know, like we've seen from Kelsey with the Chiefs, he can show up and present himself. They got some talent on the outside. They got to get better and quicker on defense. I mean, Wagner's kind of like one of those guys that can play till like he's 38, 39. He's just so smart. But, you know, is he as athletic and as quick? We saw, you know, Jason mentioned on that Saquon run, just not quick enough to get through those blocks and stop that big play. So they got to get some speed there, but Dan Quinn's a defensive guy. I believe they will. As long as Cliff Kingsbury and Dan Quinn are there with Jaden Daniels, the future is definitely bright in Washington. And given the direction the Cowboys and Giants are going, it looks like a two-team race for that division going forward.
I was going to talk about Lattimore. They picked him up in the trade halfway through the season, and he was kind of beefing a lot, dude, in this game. Especially with AJ Brown, like what was up with that?
I don't know. It was beef and just the. I mean, Lattimore's got the history of, you know, talking and stuff on there. AJ Brown's had an interesting postseason for a guy who's made a book a number one bestseller just by reading it on the sidelines
about staying in the zone and getting into a fight.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, It was interesting about him. Like there was many people calling that. Oh, they're gonna trade him in the offseason and this and that. He's not focused on the team, but. He looked pretty focused on the field, whether it was getting into a fight or making some plays and some big catches. So,
yeah, man, he's an interesting guy. I mean, he did draw the penalty, so he didn't get called himself. He did draw the penalty on Washington, so that's always the right thing to do, right? When he's just ripping guys' helmets off. But you know, he had a good game. What, 8 catches, 96 yards, and I thought it was interesting. Saquon said like he's never seen anybody practice as hard as AJ Brown does. Like the dude just goes hard in practice. And, I mean, the guy just goes hard in the games, too. I mean, if you look at him, he's just big dude, strong guy. He's physical. Lattimore, we know he's got a history when he was with the Saints, and Mike Evans, we saw that in the wild card game. I think Lattimore's best days are behind him.
He does bring
in physicality and attitude. I think Washington was kind of lacking, hoping would get him as far as they did. But as far as his skill set, it's just not there anymore. I think Brown and Mike Evans showed him up in the playoffs for sure.
Yeah.
I know. I think the bigger defender for Washington that was cracking me up, man, was it Frankie Louvu with the trying to jump the line of the tush push for like three plays in a row.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, did you hear the referee? Like, dude, if you do it again, I'm just going to give him a touchdown. I'm like, I never heard that. Like, I never heard you could even do that. Is that even a rule?
Yeah, they were talking about that on the broadcast. Okay. I guess if you don't follow the rules, the refs do have the option of giving someone a touchdown. And yeah, that was the first time I ever heard that. I'm like, what? Like, has that ever happened?
I saw some great memes out there for the Chiefs. Like, the Chiefs finding out the refs can just award you touchdowns.
Yeah.
Well, in reality, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to do it. Because instead of a team, like, say, just running that play two, three times and burning time off the clock, just run off sides every time and be like, dude, give them a touchdown. We want the time saved.
Yeah. Yep. So Philly wins 55-23. Dominant fashion. They look really nice. We will do a preview on the Super Bowl in the next week or so, right? But I like the way they look. Jalen Hurts plays like that. Running when he has to. Finding his guys when he needs to. Like, A.J. Brown has some nice catches. Like, they had some nice fourth and long conversion in this game. They looked really sharp. The whole team looked really solid. So I'm liking the way they look going into the big game in 2 weeks. Let's talk about the other one, which I'm still replaying a lot of the plays in my head right now. I'm not going to lie. First is a hell of a game. I thought neither team played really great. Both teams played really good. Things that they could take back. In the beginning of the game, Allen had some uncharacteristic throws. It was like a throwback to Josh Allen of old, where maybe some passes should have been picked off. I know one of them was on a flag being thrown and he was pointing it out, still went through it, but it was just like very uncharacteristic, him throwing to like quadruple coverage, really stupid. Jason, you mentioned about the ball protection. He has some fumbles, but he's able to palm it back up like a beast that he is. I thought still Josh Allen had a great game. He looked really nice. And the Bills still had a chance to win the game. There were a few calls, not to point this all in the refs. There's a few calls that were very controversial. First, did you guys think that he got the first down on that run, on their version of a tush push? Which, by the way, only the Eagles run that really effectively. Buffalo should not be running that shit. I was really pissed off that they kept on running it time and time again, which we haven't even seen them do it that often in the regular season. Josh Allen really does well when he's running on the outside and spreading the defense. That we also had the call where Mahomes threw the interception, but then both the defender and the wide receiver were battling it. Ball hits the ground, and then after replay, they rule it a fucking catch. Kansas City's on the 2-yard line, whatever it was. They score shortly after when Mahomes doesn't even know how to spike the ball after that. That was great to watch. And there's like some flags that they were picking up when it was convenient for KC, but let's start there and we can dissect that as we go along. You guys go start wherever you want.
I guess starting with the fourth and one, it felt like he had it, but with the call in the field, them saying not, I think the biggest reason why it's probably so controversial was you had both side judges running in from two different completely spaces and then happened to go to the guy who was farther back that didn't rule it as a first down. So I don't know what angle the other guy saw it that would have marked it a first down, but that was probably what created more of the controversy there. Like, it was tough to see even in the replay. Like, you just saw bodies. I don't think you saw anywhere where the ball is at. Josh Allen's back was closer to the first down marker than the actual ball was. So I just think there was nothing that could do to overturn it. Yeah, I agreed with you, Rome. them continuing to run that play, it was a struggle for them to pick it up in many instances. Like the one Josh Allen goes over the top to expose the ball, which was like, man, what are you doing? And he did
the goal line.
He did, and he no, it wasn't even the goal line. It was a fourth and one one. And he put it over the top just to get the first down, but they knocked it out and he fumbled it. And somehow they got it. He recovered that one. So like, yeah, they were going for it on those things, and it was not successful. They don't run it as well as Philly does. So that was questionable. I don't know how much rest played into it. It was a tough place to play. Like, nothing really looked crisp, really, for either team offensively. Probably the Bills more was a struggle. That first drive you talked about, like, two or three of Josh Allen's throws in that first drive probably should have been picked off, and, you know, it probably could have been a different deficit. For me, I mean, the Dalton Kincaid drop after Josh Allen's throw on...
That was miraculous, by the way.
Fourth and whatever. And
fourth and five.
Yeah, and Spagnuolo, like, he's the one, I think, did we talk about this? I don't know how this guy hasn't gotten a head coaching, you know, job offer. I think Aaron mentioned a couple weeks ago, because he dialed up the absolute perfect blitz at the right time that caught everyone in Buffalo off guard. And Josh Allen made the most insane throw. For him to even put it in between the secondary where he's at, that gave
a position
to make that catch. Like, Kincaid makes that catch, the game's completely different, because, man, that takes the air out of Arrowhead at that point. Like, because it was the perfect defensive call. Like, that Buffalo even said postgame they never saw coming. And at that moment, I was like, okay, I mean, obviously they're turning the ball over. It was going to go Kansas City's way, but I think that was kind of the microcosm of the game for Buffalo, where it's like it was off the fingertips when they should have had it and the game was in their reach.
Yeah, I mean, nothing came easy for Buffalo in this game. You know, the first drive, like you guys mentioned, Allen easily should have thrown two picks. Rome, you said he saw the flag. Even the announcers from Rome are like, dude, like, what are you doing? Like, even if you saw the flag, like, what are you doing? Just throwing it up with three guys there, Coleman, 1-on-3.
That's stuff he hasn't done all year.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, I don't think it was nervous. You know, you're a little hyped, right? You're trying to make that big play early, get that statement, get that first drive going. You got the ball. You don't. Casey gets it. They run it right down Buffalo's throat and go up 7-0. Put the pressure on Buffalo. I mean, you mentioned Rome, tush push, and people go like, why don't we ban it? Because only one team could do it good. So why would you penalize one team that could do something good and the other 31 teams don't do it good? Surprisingly, Buffalo and Josh Allen were converted that play 28 out of 30 times, I believe, on 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1 combined doing it. But I thought the announcers and Romo mentioned one thing that Spags and Casey noticed, that Allen always runs that play to the left.
Yeah.
So they always stacked that side and slanted the line to the left. And you could see, like, every time it was tough. And then Allen, like Jason said, basically reaches it over, sticks it over to get that first down. The ball gets knocked out. I think the only reason why he gets the ball back, because the guy that's on the ground has his back to Allen, so it's like sandwiched right in between them. He gets it. That, you know, the fourth and half a yard, there are two referees. I mean, the referee that marked it short, Allen had his back to the play, so he can't see where the ball's at. The other guy that had it for a first down, he did see where the ball was at. If you go look at the replay, I think there's enough evidence there to say that the nose of the ball reached the 40-yard line, which would have been a first down.
I mean, his shoulder's way over the first yard line, and the ball would be in that position.
I think his shoulder's back, but I think there's that one, like, lunge. He gets it and gets pushed back.
Yeah.
So progress would have hit the ball at least, you know, the tip of the ball on the 40, which would have been an automatic first down where it was placed at originally.
I bet you if KC did that, they would have got the first down.
If they hadn't, I guarantee you it would have been the talk of the town for sure. But that, to me, was a turning point because Buffalo was up 22-21.
Yeah.
Only 5 yards away now from getting a field goal range with four sets of downs to do it. KC gets the ball. Five plays later, Mahomes goes in and does that fake Gronk spike or whatever the fuck that was. And then from there, it just felt like KC had all the momentum. Was it a catch? Wasn't it a catch on that worthy play? To me, probably incomplete, because neither guy really had possession of the ball, and the nose of the ball, it does hit the ground, which by rule of neither guy has possession would rule it incomplete.
Yeah.
Still would have been a first down regardless because there was a hold on that play, so they still would have had the ball at the 20 instead of inside the 5. But, yeah, I mean, Buffalo, I mean, even the Cook touchdown, I mean, that was miraculous on a fourth and like a yard on that option.
That was phenomenal.
I mean, basically holding himself up and then doing the goal line lean over. It was an entertaining game, but yeah, just nothing came easy for Buffalo. And Casey, I thought was a little more efficient, even though, you know, they had the turnover in the game, the only turnover.
Yeah, them not converting on that fourth and short, you figured Buffalo will keep on marching down, at least get a field goal, changes that game a little bit. Same thing with that catch. They had opportunities to win this game. I thought Buffalo looked really good, and I was kind of waiting for them to kind of take it. Even despite like some of those ref calls and whatever may have happened, they had their chance to win it. And when you're leaving the game to the refs to kind of decide the game for you, it sucks, especially when you know it's like going to a match, into a boxing match. You know the refs got paid by Oscar De La Hoya. The fire is Oscar De La Hoya's guy, but yeah, you're going to go to the cards? I don't fucking think so, man. You got to knock his ass out. Buffalo was there. Even then, despite everything, they got the ball back. 3 minutes left. With Josh Allen, you got to expect. You still like your chances. And, you know, as we all saw, I feel like they kind of went away from the running game a little bit. I would like to see Cook being utilized a little bit more in the fourth quarter. I feel like they kind of abandoned that, and they kind of said, hey, Josh Allen, take us home, you know? Kind of shitty. I know he's done it all year round, but still, like, the running game does help out. We've been talking about this, you know, all year long. James Cook had a hell of a game. Really great game. Really impressive. I thought even Buffalo's defense, for how young they are, they did enough to kind of fluster Mahomes' spots. Chiefs are really good situationally. It kills me. It kills me to see them just find the little things to do to win. But they did just enough, and refs or not, they're going back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you mentioned James Cook. That run within, like, the two-yard line or whatever, he just refuses to go down and is just, like, parallel to the ground, holding his body up with one hand to reach the ball across the line, just fighting to get every yard. Hey, but Aaron talked about the overall easiness in which, I don't say easiness, it was hard for Buffalo to move the ball, and you look, they went for it on fourth down 6 times.
Yeah.
And it was in 4 for 6, where the Chiefs only went for it one time on fourth down, and they had 100% conversion. So that was just the battle where, like, everything Buffalo did offensively was like, it was taking 4 downs. It was 3rd and 7, like, every single time, or 3rd and 10 every time. And like, okay, now we got to go for it, or we're getting it to 3rd and short, and it's taking us two plays to get it across to get a first down. It's just a struggle. So I think you talked about it. You can't go into Arrowhead and expect like you're just going to be getting a luck call here or there. Like, the Bills had to go in and take it. And we talked about it during the regular season too. That's why, like, I felt that Chiefs slide was going to come at that midway point in the schedule. They're going to get some tougher games where, hey, if this game was in Buffalo, you know, where was it at? And the fact that the Chiefs had the home field advantage was going to give them a little bit of the edge, even with a bunch of things going, you know, Buffalo's kind of way this season. The fact they lost a couple of those games and Kansas City never did, you know, these are the type of breaks that happen when you're the team with the bye and you have home field advantage.
Yeah, I mean, you guys said, I mean, going into KC, it's going to be tough. You can't expect, like you guys mentioned, to get any calls from the refs. Everybody that goes in there will tell you the same thing. It's a dogfight. I think KC really helped them. I mean, they were Mahomes, whether or not how badly he was banged up with that ankle sprain towards the end of the year. Getting that bye week and then getting the home game. I mean, Houston, let's be realistic, they were banged up. They didn't have the offensive weapons really to give Kansas City a game. And then Buffalo, Baltimore the week before was a heavyweight fight. I mean, that game could have gone either way. I mean, it's 3 turnovers or not, it's Mark Andrews dropping the ball right there on the goal line from that game, maybe going to overtime. So Kansas City was pretty fresh coming in this game. Buffalo obviously had to play Denver, Baltimore, 2 physical defensive teams, top 5 defenses coming in. So then you get 3 straight really top 5 defenses. If you look at Kansas City, their numbers have gone down a bit, but Spacks and still call a great game. And as Jason said, that blitz, nobody saw him. They picked guys in motion. There was no indicator that they were going to get a corner blitz on that play. And Allen made a great throw off basically his back foot, 2 guys on him. And Kincaid he couldn't catch it. I mean, it's a tough catch, you know, slippery. You're going full speed. You got to stop, come back. The pass is in the perfect spiral. Stuff happens. But yeah, going for it on fourth down as many times as they did, not getting the ball to Cook enough in that first half, kind of trying to get Allen, I think, in a rhythm. They got back to what they do. Cook dominated the third quarter. But, I mean, in the end, Mahomes, the Chiefs, like you said, Rome, situationally, they're really good. And like I said, they always have the way to get themselves to third and two, third and three, so they don't have to be forced to go for it on fourth down. They can do a lot of different things against you. And that was a big key. That was a big difference, I think. Just that bye week in the home field really, really showed out in these playoffs.
Yeah, I think Juju Smith-Schuster had a really big catch that kind of extended in the fourth quarter. Kareem Hunt, they just used him as a workhorse, only got 2-3 yards on every carry, but was really efficient. They just, everyone just plugged and played, and they used everyone as efficient as possibly, as humanly possible. Andy Reid is sucking as much juice out of those oranges as possible. That's a weird analogy, but that's how it came out.
I thought you were going to say taking all the meat off the bones, but we'll go.
Yeah, I like that too. I like that a lot better. Sucking the juice. That's so fucking weird. One thing, because they were going for like fourth down, you know, they left some points on the board instead of going for the field goal, you know, the extra point. They missed out on two-point conversions. Those were pretty costly. It could have been a different game, I feel like. But Chiefs move on, 32-29, an instant NFL classic that I will probably be avoiding on NFL films from here on out. And now they face the Eagles. Any other comments on the game?
No, that's about it. I mean, it was, I think going back to our picks on this game, this was the one I was probably, I would say, dreading the most. I think it was the most toss-up, you know, game. Beginning of the season, I picked the Chiefs to go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl, do the three-peat. But I think we talked about it on the last pod, like America was for the Bills in this game, and you kind of felt them. That was like the hard pick. It was going to be tough, and the Chiefs were kind of almost like inevitable at this point. And like the three-peat just kind of feels on the horizon. This is what's going to happen. This team's blessed on it. I don't know if it's the end, but you mentioned what Andy Reid's getting. Hey, Juju Smith-Schuster is going to get 60 yards. Holly Brown's going to get this. Kareem Hunt's all of a sudden going like, every little piece where they thought they didn't have the weapons anymore offensively are going to kind of contribute to all the pieces are kind of falling into place for them offensively, where it's been the defense carrying them through a lot of this season. So it was interesting. It feels like the entire year has been inevitable for the Chiefs.
Inevitable for an ass-cooking. I can't wait to cover that game. Take a preview of the Super Bowl. I'll go against them again. I don't care. Real quick, though, about the Bills. Everyone said like this was their best chance to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. They definitely were right there. However, this young team, man, they pretty much retooled on offense and defense. They got to get some more pieces on defense, but I like where this Bills team is going. I know it's tough getting your ass beat by the same guy four times in the playoffs, but I don't think it's over. It got that Manning, Brady kind of vibe. I like Mahomes in the future, or not Mahomes. I like Allen in the future. I like this team. I can't wait for them to get back and make some noise and get over the hump next time around.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for Buffalo. I mean, I wasn't high on them coming into the season. That's probably pretty obvious from the first preview pod we did. I think I probably had them finishing third and not making the playoffs. Defensively, they've got to get better. They got to get some, you know, better guys in the secondary. But it's tough, man. You're right there on the doorstep. You lose. And this conference is deep, man. I mean, Burrow and the Bengals are going to regroup. Herbert and Harbaugh and the Chargers are coming. I think they're going to be a surprise team next year. KC, is this the last year before the window's done and this is the fatigue and everything kicks in and Kelce just rides off to the sunset with Taylor Swift? Who knows? We'll find out. I don't know what I want to see more, the breakup or the Chiefs lose, but that's for another topic, another day. But yeah, I mean, you talk about it. I mean, P. Ryan, he's not used the whole game, and then on third down, he gets a 17-yard completion to ice the game. That's the stuff Andy Reid comes up with. Like, it's just like, page six of that playbook that no one's like ran since like back in the install. He's like, hey, remember this play? Let's just run it, or whatever they want to call it. Tom and Jerry catch the mouse, whatever kind of plays they want to do, they come up with and they execute.
The Waffle House menu's got deep plays for Andy on the sideline over
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
The Tommy Burger guy, got to get it to him. Yeah, that's it. I got nothing else. Let's talk some coaching updates. Time to talk some more coaching updates. We had a few hires since the last time we did the pod. The only team left still on the coaching search, that would be the Saints. And they were the second team to fire their coach in the middle of the season. So really curious if they're trying to poach somebody off of the Chiefs or the Eagles staff. I doubt it. It's anyone on the Eagles staff. They're going to probably stick around. But any ideas on the Saints? Or does nobody want the job?
I feel like no one wants the job, but they got to be waiting for somebody.
Yeah.
At this point, they should be calling Spags up.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, man. I mean, Spags is there. He'd probably take it. I mean, no one else is going to.
Would he? I feel like he likes being at DC.
65, he's, what, 65 years old?
Here he did the head coaching thing.
Yeah,
was
but
like
that was with a bad.
15 years ago?
Bad St. Louis Rams team.
Was the Rams?
Yeah. Damn.
St. Louis Rams. That was pre
St. Louis Rams, yeah.
Yeah, and Fisher was bad.
Fisher was bad.
So, yeah, I mean, Spags, I mean, everybody kind of talks about, like, he kind of got, like, a raw deal there. And what did he only last, like, 2 years? And that was before, like, coaches were getting, like, canned back 2 years. And usually, back then, he was still getting 4 years at least.
Yeah, you get 4 years.
So, yeah.
Well, last time I heard favorites from it was, and you could be hailing out the Kellen Moore, waiting for the Philly or for the Eagles. I say Phillies, waiting for the Eagles to finish Kellen Moore. And then the other name I was circling a ton with the Bears job as the kind of runner up was Mike McCarthy, and he was early on interviewing for the Saints job too. So I don't know if McCarthy is the runner up if they don't get a deal done with Kellen Moore here in 2 weeks.
I feel like McCarthy wanted the Bears job. And now he's just going to sit this one out.
Probably I think you're right. We talked about this off air, but I don't know the appeal of the Saints job right now. It's the cupboard's fairly bare. This isn't a team that you're going to take over and is going to win right away. You paid a lot of money for Carr, but I already heard they were potentially shopping him this year. Older Taysom Hill, you know, almost in a running back's age, 29 for Kamara and beat up. Olave's had injury concerns as well too, and he's the youngest part of their, you know, core that they got there down there offensively. Jordan up there too. He's about 35 too.
Yeah.
So,
and the linebacker Davis is like 35, and Honey Badger's like 33, 34. So they're an olding, aging team. I think if you do go there, there's not that pressure to win. I mean, I've never felt like New Orleans has ever had, like, that pressure to win as a coach. I mean, Peyton was there. He did well. But before that, you know, fans were wearing bags over their heads for, like, paper bags for, like, a decade, right? So it's not a big media market. LSU still rules the state. So Brian Kelly's going to get more hot seat than you ever will if you're the coach. So, I mean, if Kellen Moore wants the gig, okay. But who's going to be your quarterback? I'm not sure where they're drafting. They got a lot of needs. They're an aging old team. That's kind of why Sean Payton stepped aside, say what you want, you know, and got eventually traded.
He saw the writing on the wall. He left them in shambles, man, and he just took off.
He did. Like, and Dennis Allen, like he did with the Raiders back when they were Oakland, got left with the scraps and eventually found his way to Jason's Bears with Ben Johnson. So it's a win-win for everybody, I guess.
All right, let's talk about the three new hires we got. Let's start with the Dallas Cowboys. Let's do it. The rumors were true. They hired Brian Schottenheimer. His dad, Marty, was a pretty good coach with the Chargers. I think he has like the 6 month wins for head coaches, but never really made it to the big game, right? Is that right? Never won the big one. Never won the big one.
I don't even think he ever coached in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think he just made it to the conference championships.
With the Chiefs and maybe with the... I don't think he ever made it with the Chargers. Remember the disappointing they got beat in that divisional round by the Patriots that one year?
Oh, man. Yeah. The press conference was just today to introduce Brian. Hell of a press conference. I'm on the road listening to it live, which was great, and then hearing all the sports talk radio talk about it. Jerry Jones bragging about how you can't take more of a gamble on a head coach. That's why he was praising himself for stepping out of the box, for hiring someone without head coaching experience. Like, it sounded fucking delusional. This guy is off the rocker, man. It's time for him to go. Like, he could have phrased this so many different ways of hiring Brian. You know, like, the whole offense likes him. Dak likes him. He has a great rapport with he has a lot of connections to the NFL. He's been bouncing around for a while. So if anything, you know, there's probably guys that want to work with him to kind of support him getting a HC job. But it was not a good presser, and not a lot of fanfare, not a lot of good vibes from everyone else. A lot of Cowboys fans, a lot of former Cowboys players are not happy about this hire. So the people that are happy, it's very slim. Far few in between. Thoughts on the hire?
Yeah, it's just an underwhelming pick for America's team that, hey, it's supposed to be, you know, the flashy names and everything there. And they haven't really done that, honestly, from a head coaching car. I mean, McCarthy's not exactly a flashy name. At least won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, when they brought him, you know, they brought Parcells in back in the day, but that was kind of like a big deal at the time because of how much control Jerry wanted and how much control Parcells wanted at the time too. But then, you know, you had your Dave Campos of the world, and you had, you know, the Jason Garrett succession plan, and, you know, all that type of stuff. And the head coaching stuff's always weird, I think, with Jerry, because he wants control of the team. So he wants, you know, for better or for worse, call him like some yes man that's going to do what he says. And like, hey, it's more of an honor to coach my team, basically. I'm not going to be one-upped on an ego stuff. When you look at, you know, Brian Schottenheimer, yeah, he's been around the league, but he's just been lateral move after lateral move. I mean, back to 06, he's been an offensive coordinator with the Jets. And, I mean, we're 20 years later, and he was still offensive coordinator with, I mean, no shade on the guy, but, like, usually when you got these type of, like, prodigy type stuff, when you're a young offensive coordinator, man, like, this is a person you're swooping up to be a head coach and at least get a shot. He just never had that shot. Did a stint with the Rams. He was a Seahawks, you know, Jaguars, passing game coordinator, just all over these assistants. And, like, at a certain point, you're looking like, what are you going to do to get that head shot? And in this one, he's in the current, you know, coaching staff. It's not like we're bringing this guy from the outside. Like, they let the entire coaching staff go except basically him and just elevate him to the position. So I thought the perfect pairing, I texted a friend of mine, the perfect pairing of this was them hiring Matt Eberflus as the defensive coordinator. Because I was like, that's just perfect based on the last couple of years I've had to deal with Eberflus. So I don't know if that's bringing in your guy with head coaching experience, but he's definitely not going to be helping with the game management with Brian Schottenheimer. So.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry all along wanted to keep Mike McCarthy. And yeah, we talked about on the last one, you know, Jason Witten was the coach in waiting, and then Mike McCarthy just walked out the door, and Jerry then does what Jerry does. Hey, let me call Dion. Hey, let me call this guy. These guys are interested. I think Jerry's a smart guy. You know, we said this hire was going to be announced late Friday night. It was like announced like 10 o'clock Eastern time. I was at the bar having a beer, and also breaking news, Brian Schottenheimer, even though we knew it was coming Thursday morning, Wednesday evening.
Yeah.
So that's what Jerry does. I think Jerry's a smart guy, but sometimes he just outsmarts himself. He wants to be like, you know what? This guy's not on anybody's radar. If he hits, I look like a genius. If he doesn't,
oh, for sure,
I still look great because I gave a guy that's never had a chance, that's been in the league for 20 years, a chance. So no one's going to blame me. And I think it's going to go similar to what you saw with the Patriots, Gerard Mayo, where it's just going to be a disaster. And after 1 year, is he going to be looking for a new coach?
Well, you're messing me up, Matt, because I want to ask over under 2 years. That's what I'm setting it as.
Wait, well, typically Jerry doesn't get rid of coaches. I mean, Garrett was there, what, 9 years?
Yeah, but Garrett was there for like a long time too.
Who was the coach that was like legally blind in one eye? You know who I'm talking about. How long was he there for? You know exactly who I'm talking about.
I do. I'm looking it up right now.
I just can't remember his name because he was like an offensive line coach his whole career, and then he got a head coaching gig in Dallas.
You're talking about he went to the Notre Dame, right? Phillips.
No, not Wade Phillips. The other guy.
I'm looking up.
I like Parcells in Dallas, by the way. I think that's when I rooted for Dallas for a little bit.
Chan Gailey?
No, not Chan Gailey, man.
After Switzer, you had Chan Gailey, Dave Campo, Bill Parcells, Wade Phillips, Jason Garrett.
Okay. I thought there was no other intern coach there.
I don't know. Dave Campo always sticks out to me because that was back in like 2000, 2002 when like Hard Knocks first was.
I just don't
like
remember him
there.
At all. I don't
really?
Remember Dave Campo at
all.
Yeah,
I think it is Dave Campbell. That's the guy I'm talking about. Because I think Dave Campbell was like a career like offensive line coach, wasn't he?
I just don't remember him at all.
I said I only remember because that was like early Hard Knocks and it was like the Dallas Cowboys had Hard Knocks and it's Dave Campo and it's just like, yeah, this guy is not Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah. All right. We'll leave that alone then. But so you're going over 2 years?
Under.
Under.
Yeah.
Jason.
Oh, man.
You know, I'm going to say he does better than what people think he's going to do.
I don't know if he's going to do better, but I'm going to say over. And the only reason I'm going to say that is because I think the Cowboys are going to have some personnel stuff that Jerry's well aware of that I don't know how much he's expecting from this team for the first like year, definitely, maybe the second year. And so he's going to like gift into a third year.
Well, they just spent so much money on the team.
So so you think he's going to go over 2 years or after 2 years get canned? Because I don't see him making it more than 2 years because no matter what, they're already going to be the third best team in that division, and they're not going to leapfrog Jaden Daniels and not leapfrogging Philadelphia anytime soon.
Dude, they missed their window, man. No one expected the Commanders to be.
And if the NFC North is going to be as good as we think it's going to be, like, where do the Cowboys fit in if they're not winning a division? I don't see them getting a wild card. They've got Ross. I mean, it's going to be awfully tough, man.
It's probably last place.
It's probably going to be more of a push right at 2 years at this point. Because I don't think they want and done him.
No.
Because I think Jerry will be like almost want to kind of approve a point unless there's something out there from a head coaching perspective. But hey,
they'll have a little leeway.
The hot candidate next year, and I don't even know who to think is it. Brady maybe might be the hot candidate. Joe Brady would be if Buffalo's kind of running it back and where things are at, but. At this point, Jerry's not even inclined to be like, oh, I'm going to go get the hot candidate because they didn't even interview Ben Johnson or even entertain that from this time around.
Well, congrats, Jason, the new Bears, so you get to relax for a little bit.
Oh, yeah, we get the best head coach of the cycle, man. We won the offseason champs.
Well, definitely great at the end. Let's talk about the Raiders, Pete Carroll. Grandpa Carroll.
This one was interesting. Caught me a little by surprise. But it shouldn't have because he was all in trying to get the Bears job very early on, making it known. So, you know, he definitely wanted to get back into coaching and get a shot. Given the current state where the Raiders are at, like overall, really kind of post Gruden, really they kind of just been like an overall mess, like, you know, as an organization, like functionally, like just like kind of getting by, no real direction. So you're bringing in Pete Carroll, who kind of, you know, builds up the program in college, builds up the Seahawks for like sustainability in the Super Bowls pretty early on in his run. And so you bring, I guess, more of a team building culture guy who's going to, you know, get the players motivated, you know, still, even though the guys, you said Grandpa Carroll Roman that earlier.
I did.
I mean, but he's got young energy. He's never really felt kind of his age versus some of his contemporaries that have been out there. So, you know, I don't know if this is kind of just, this would be a guy like it's a 3-year window for him to kind of set the page, turn the Raiders around, get them slightly competitive. I'm sure he's not be looking around after that, but
at the top, this feels as well.
It is, but I think you got to. I think you probably got a short term kind of fix to really build this team up and looking for something pretty particular.
I think he's like a holdover until they hire who they really want to hire in 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, Pete Carroll, interestingly, man, I thought Seattle should have probably kept him. I do like the hire they got, but I mean, 14 years, I think he was there. They finished 9-8 his last year. Pete Carroll never wanted to go. Like, he basically kind of agreed to part ways, but immediately said he wanted to continue coaching. He then became, quote-unquote, teaching a class at USC.
Still got to teach.
Yeah, and as soon as that Bears job was open, Pete Carroll made it be known that he wanted it. I mean, I think he would have almost taken any job. I mean, if Jerry wanted to get Pete Carroll as a Cowboys coach, he could have done that and just kept Brian Schottenheimer as his OC, which kind of was the vibe when they had there in Seattle. Maybe that's why he didn't want to do it, because Carroll would have got rid of his ass. But, you know, the Raiders, interesting situation. I mean, that division is loaded with quarterbacks, too. If Nix continues to be what we think he's going to be under Sean Payton, he's only going to get better. Harbaugh, Herbert, and the Chargers, they're going to get more weapons. They got a lot of cap space. They're going to get better. Mahomes and Reed are always going to be competing. So the Raiders got to get themselves a quarterback. A lot of mock drafts have them drafting Shadir out of Colorado. So that's a good start maybe for him. You know, they got Bowers, but they got a lot of holes. I mean, he's going to make them respectable. They're going to be better at the little things that they're not. They're going to be more disciplined, better execution-wise. But, you know, what do they finish 4-13 this year? I mean, next year, what are they, maybe a 6-7 win team? I think the 3 years under Carroll, whether or not they get the players and the quarterback, you're going to be looking at a team that's probably going to be winning 7-10 games, maybe 7-9 for the next 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, they make a move from there probably.
Yeah. Who's the other one?
Cohen? Jaguars?
Liam Cohen. That's right. We were talking about that. I didn't think he would do the 360 when we're, or the 180 when we were talking about it, Aaron. I think last time you said, yo, man, now that they got rid of Balke, maybe they talk to Cohen again. I'm like, dude, he just agreed to be the highest paid assistant coach. No fucking way. Next day, he's in for an interview. I think we talked about it. I think he already got hired by, on the last pod.
Like at the end, it was confirmed. But not like official, the contract wasn't signed.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's our guy. So, thoughts on that hire?
Obviously, Shad Khan was impressed for probably his plan for what he's going to do for Trevor Lawrence. He was another hot name on there. Aaron talked about their potentially link with Brady, you know, being associated with that Oakland job. And whatever drama you with Will about him going back to the Bucs as an assistant coach and what they were going to pay him, you know, highest assistant in the league or something like that. Like, he's done some good things with the Buccaneers offense, really, you know, resurgent from a Baker Mayfield perspective and really got him back on track where a lot of people think. So I think it could be it could be a good hire. Jacksonville's, you know, organizationally has not been great, I think, up and down, but there is pieces there to build around. We talked about that last pod. I'll tell you, on the internet, I did see he did not win the introductory press conference today. Apparently, he tried to do the Duval chant and was not the best thing. So
I missed it.
Yeah, you missed it. I don't know. I saw it on Awful Announcing that he did not win the press conference with that.
Dude, Awful Announcing is brutal with everybody.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, I mean, you could ask Nick Sirianni, who did not win the opening press conference either. So how little, you know, does that matter?
He still hasn't won it.
No, still hasn't won it. He's taking the team to the Super Bowl. But, yeah, I think Liam Cohen, an interesting name. I mean, he was floated out there. One of the young hot coordinators that you kind of had to have in the coaching cycle. Trevor Lawrence, you know, we've talked about it several times in the pod, has been really just an average NFL starting quarterback for all the hype. Got his money recently. Hey, there's pieces around him you can build. You know, there's something there in Jacksonville that he could potentially, you know, take advantage of, that this was a team that's supposed to go to the playoffs potentially this year and really drop the ball. So it's not coming into a bear cover like the Saints job we were talking through. There's something there's something there at least building in Jacksonville. It's whether they can sustain it and not just do this like win for a year or two and then tear down like they had kind of been so much of the history in Jacksonville.
Yeah, they got a lot of talent on offense. You got Brian Thomas Jr., Travis Etienne. So it's just the defense, I think, it's like that needs a lot of work.
They got talent on both sides of the ball. I mean, they got to get the offensive line better. But, yeah, I mean, the main thing is getting Trevor Lawrence on track. We saw what he did with Baker this year. I think similar teams style-wise, right? I mean, Baker has Mike Evans. He got Bucky Irving. Now you got Thomas Jr., Etienne, Evan Engram as a tight end. They got some young pieces on defense because they drafted, what, number one in the top five here for a few years. Another top pick coming up. I believe Cohen comes from the McVay tree, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So there's a lot of that going on. Outside of Ben Johnson and Joe Brady, those guys are kind of the next tier of OCs, head coaches. Two of them are now getting that leap. As Jason mentioned, Joe Brady's coming back to Buffalo. I think they're going to have another successful season, and likely he will be at the top of the list of names next season to be getting a head coaching job since he withdrew from the Saints.
Awesome. So far, who would you guys say has the best hire of the offseason?
Come on, man. That's obvious.
Well, I know your answer.
They get the best head coaching hire. They get the best defensive coordinator hires thus far. It's the Bears, man.
I gotta be honest, man. I really like Vrabel, so I got the number one. But yeah, Bears are killing it right now.
I think the team that's most primed to make that next leap would be the Bears. I like what they brought in, their staff wise. I mean, Vrabel's a big name. I think he'll get the Patriots turned around. Carroll's up there with the Raiders, but they're a mess. Tough division. That's stacked. So given right now where the Bears are going, Minnesota, they got a lot of questions on who's going to be their quarterback, a lot of free agents. And Detroit bringing in, you know, outside coordinator now from Denver, past game coach, and their own promotion from within for defensive coordinator. The Bears hire looks great on paper. Let's see if they can execute and win some football games.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the Vrabel hire. I think we probably put that as number two for what that's good, because you know, that team has not been good for the last couple of years. They found their quarterback with Drake May. I think for what Vrabel runs, you know, offensively and defensively, there's probably a few more pieces they're going to be looking to add in the offseason. You know, for how much he relies on the running game. You know, is Stevenson going to be the guy? He had a lot of like fumble issues, but yeah, McDaniel's back as an offensive coordinator. So there's stuff to like there. I think Liam Cohen's probably right there because I think he's got the pieces potentially do some really creative things offensively there. Carroll, I think it's a good hire from a fit and just kind of reestablishing the Raiders. But as far as like turning into wins because of the division, I don't think it's going to be probably seen as successful as maybe the other three guys I mentioned.
Yeah, I'm not counting Schottenheimer, not counting Carroll. I think that's like a lose situation. I think it's just more for stability. But out of all the coordinators, and not counting Vrabel as well, just because I think that's going to be like automatic turnaround. But history says only one of these coordinators is going to be successful as a head coach. You got Liam Cohen, Ben Johnson, and Aaron Glenn with the Jets. Who has the toughest road ahead of them?
I think it's Aaron Glenn, just because they have no idea what's going on with quarterback for them right now, and they've had talent on. They'd always say they had everything but a quarterback with the Jets, and that was supposed to be why adding Aaron Rodgers was the key to them making the Super Bowl run, which many people predicted, and they did it. But now you got a lot of changes and elsewhere of that. You know, the defense may be a little bit older at this point. Offensively, they have some pieces, but what's that going to look like? I think their quarterback answer in the offseason is probably the biggest thing for Aaron Glenn, but I would think he has the toughest road.
Yeah, I agree. Aaron Glenn's got the toughest road. Who's going to be the quarterback? Are they going to be able to keep Garrett Wilson happy for him to stay and want to sign a contract extension when he comes up there with the Jets? Defensively, you know, they are getting older, young secondary, but not much on the defensive line, pass rusher-wise. Their linebackers are all old. Glenn, you know, Brome likes to talk about culture. I think he'll make the guys, you know, more accountable, kind of get in their face and challenge them, whether or not that can lead to wins, given just the history of that organization and Woody and stuff. Will he stay out of his way? It's a tough road for Glenn, wishing him the best. But of the three, you know, Jaguars of Trevor Lawrence and Johnson over there with Caleb, the upside for them immediately seems to be a lot quicker path to winning football games and making a playoff push.
Interesting. Awesome. I guess that's it.
You want to talk about your boy Saleh back to the Niners? What's the talk, man?
I haven't heard anything yet. I think people are just happy.
Yeah, they've been saying. I mean, you haven't had really a good defensive coordinator since he left.
All since D'Amico Ryans left.
That was his protege, man.
Yeah. No, I think the fans up here are pretty happy about it, but no one has really talked about it. At least I haven't really heard too much about it. I've been watching a lot of tennis the past week, watching Australian Open. I'll talk a little bit more about that on a later segment, and I'm watching some basketball. Lakers surprisingly picking up some wins. They're somehow going to grab the fourth or fifth seed, and it's wild. This is a wild NBA season. So,
well, Rome, the biggest sporting event this weekend in between the conference championship games and the Super Bowl every year is the WWE Royal Rumble coming from Indianapolis.
What is
many
it?
It's this Saturday out of Indianapolis. WWE, biggest it's been maybe since the Attitude Era right now, just premiered on Netflix a couple weeks ago. You're going to have all the stars out for this Royal Rumble. John Cena's last Royal Rumble could be the odds-on favorite to win for his last Rumble, going to his last WrestleMania later this year in Vegas.
You want to do a special pot on it?
For the Rumble or for Mania? Because Mania, I'm going to be there.
Oh, you are?
Oh, I'm there both nights.
Where is it at?
Allegiant Stadium, where the Raiders play, man.
Oh, nice. When is that?
April?
April 20th. It's Easter.
Yeah. That's great. No, like, we can do a special pod on it later on this week.
It's your call, man.
We need to get some guests on here.
Yeah, I mean, probably going to need some. You guys aren't going to know what's going on.
The Royal Rumble, man. You remember when Jason brought that clip? I think, Rome, you sent that clip where the dude from, like, Notre Dame just slammed that Ohio State fan. That's how Jason gets during the Royal Rumble WrestleMania. Like, you just keep your distance. That's why I don't go over there and watch events anymore, man. It gets too violent. It gets violent, man.
I'm going to throw you over the couch, bro. We got to throw you over the top rope.
That's
2
hilarious.
Feet touch the ground.
2 feet got to touch, yep.
It's why not? Star-studded.
Let's do it. Let's talk about it later in the week. I'll do my research. I'll watch some clips. We could do a Russian roulette bet, round of bets, or something like that.
The gambling key for the Rumble, I don't know if I talked this on air.
You told us.
Okay, yeah.
Random draw of numbers, and get that wrestler.
Yeah. How many people you got? You put 30 numbers in a hat, you split it up with the A's, and then you get that wrestler. You never know.
I like it, actually.
It's the best way to gamble on it, you know? The odds are even. Could be anywhere you go. And then you get two Rumbles. You get the men's Rumble now and the women's Royal Rumble. So,
ooh,
you get two.
I have seen some women's clips. I will definitely watch it, I guess.
So the women have... Is the men still 30 wrestlers?
It's still 30.
What about the women? What's their count going to be?
They're 32.
Okay.
Aaron, you used to be a big wrestling guy. What happened?
Dude, that was like 20 years ago, man.
Just like
once WCW dissolved and that whole WCW WWE war, like I got out, man.
Dude, I was a big WCW guy.
I love the WCW, NWO.
I think that's when I stopped watching it. Yeah, NWO. Oh, man, I had their shirts.
That was the era of wrestling, man.
Well, Dennis Rodman was my favorite athlete, so I used to dress like him. And
Rodman hanging out. Dennis Rodman hanging out at Sturgis against the Mailman. DDP, Dallas Page. I mean, those are the days, dude.
Rodman just, you know, right after the NBA finals, but then, you know, hanging out in Vegas or whatever, going to Nitro, like, and right before like game 5 or something of the NBA finals.
classic. Beat the crap out of somebody and then tag them with the spray paint and leave them there.
Probably could have picked a better role model.
Sorry, when you're NWO, you're NWO for life, man.
For life.
Explains my party life. All right, I'll do it. We'll see you guys later in the week.
See ya.